The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
And somehow we've made it to Wednesday. Welcome to the middle of the week, everyone. That means tomorrow is Friday Eve, and then Friday, and then it's the weekend again. Live for weekends these days. Anyway, welcome. So, lot going on. Our guest today is once again Tom Hartman. You know, I've known Tom for a dozen years or so, maybe a little more, and he just is the smartest and nicest guy, right? He knows his shit about just about everything. And, you know, he's writing this series of books, the Hidden History books. And I think this is number 8. And I think he's been on the show each time one of the books has come out. I think there's 10. We'll find out. He'll join us at the bottom of the hour. He'll jump in live. So any questions for Tom Hartman, feel free to jump into either chat room. We've got one, the busier one, at the YouTube stream, which you can get on the Listen Live page at NicoleSandler.com, which is just at NicoleSandler.com/listen-live. And that's where the second chat room is embedded. It's a lot quieter in there. There's usually just a handful of people, like our pal Robert Hill in New York City, and maybe who else is in there? House of Roberts is occasionally in there. Proudscale, Lisi D. People hang out there. It's a much smaller crowd. So those who are intimidated by the YouTube chat that moves fairly quickly, hang out in the other room. We got some great people hanging out. All right. So Tom Hartman will be here. And I thought, all right, so I've got the first half hour. I can open the phones. Should you care to call in, feel free, 954-889-6410, or you can Skype in to Nicole Sandler, all one word. I thought I could go over the latest news, and there's a lot of stuff going on. It looks like the railroads are going on strike. Amtrak has now canceled all their long distant excursions, I guess, trips, beginning tomorrow. So that's, you know, not looking great. There's stuff going on here in South Florida. You know, the trial for the Parkland shooter is going on. Now, it's not a trial for the murders of the 17 that he killed and the 17 others that he horribly wounded in that shooting, because he pled guilty. This is a trial that's just to determine his fate, whether he lives or dies, literally, whether he gets the death sentence or life without parole. So that's what they're waiting. That's what is going on. And so they estimated this trial, it's a penalty phase trial only, that it would go on for 4 to 6 months. Well, today, The judge was not a happy camper. So I don't know why it is that it's so often that the defense lawyers are so inept. And in this case, I'm talking about Alex Jones, who is also on trial and also got admonished by the judge again today. It's a different trial. This one is in Connecticut. We're not going to deal with that one today, maybe later in the week. But I want to play for you a little clip from the courthouse here in Fort Lauderdale in Broward County, Florida, where this shooter from Parkland is awaiting his fate. And so, again, the defense gave a witness list with 80 names on it. They've barely called half of them so far. So keep that in mind, and let me show you just a short, this is like a 2-minute clip of what happened in court today. Brace yourself. The stupidity of people is stupid.
Who is your next witness, and when are they being called, and which attorney is going to question them? Let me be clear, if I wasn't before.
That's the judge talking to the defense attorney.
Because these don't have anything to do with your next witness, then why are we having the jury wait outside right now?
Just yeah. We were trying to move everything in because... in terms of timing, we do it now.
In terms of timing, it would be much better to do it during the lunch break when the jury needs longer than you all. So we'll go ahead and pass on this. Let's bring the jury in, please.
Your Honor?
Yes?
At this time, the defense rests.
What? What?
Other than putting in our records.
What? Look at her face. It's just stunned.
We're not playing chess.
And the,
I mean,
and the prosecution table is all going, what?
The jury back in? Thank you. All right, go ahead and bring your records.
To B, Nicholas Cruz Henderson, episode one record.
Well, let me just stop. State, are you going to have anything ready for today?
She's asking the prosecution. No. No.
We're
expecting. There was 80
witnesses.
We're waiting for 40 more witnesses.
40 more witnesses.
I just want to say, this is the most uncalled for, unprofessional way to try a case. You all knew about this, and even if you didn't make your decision until this morning, to have 22 people plus all of this staff and every attorney march into court, be waiting as if it's some kind of game. Now I have to send them home. The state's not ready. They're not going to have a witness ready. We have another day wasted. I have never experienced a level of unprofessionalism.
Wow.
In my career.
Wow.
It's unbelievable.
Wow.
So, Judge, if we had any pretrial matters, you asked us to be here at 9:15. We were here at 9:15 to discuss pretrial matters. I have been practicing in this county for 22 years.
You know what? I don't want to hear it.
Well, Judge, you're insulting me on the record in front of my client, and I believe that I should be able to.
Okay, you can do that later. You can make your record later, but you've been insulting me the entire trial.
Wow. You've been insulting me the entire time. I love a judge who says what she means and calls out these attorneys. You've been insulting. They put out this is the penalty phase trial of the Parkland Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shooter who murdered 17 people. He's charged with attempted murder of the other 17 that he hurt. He pleaded guilty. So this is just the penalty phase trial that they estimated would last up to 6 months. And the defense today, out of the blue, with half of their 80-person witness list still having not testified, they rest. The other side's not ready. They're not. They thought there were going to be 40 more witnesses. The judge's like, you're not, I'm sure you don't have a witness for today. And they're like, no, we thought there were going to be 40 more witnesses. Florida. Welcome to it. But it's not only Florida. I guess, here's my segue. We have two prizes of senators here. First, you got Rick Scott, Voldemort, how we affectionately refer to him. And Voldemort is the head of the Republican National Senatorial Campaign Committee, the NSRCC or whatever it is. And he's not doing well. They've spent most of their money already, and now the party wants to know, what'd you do with all those millions of dollars? We were so far ahead of the Democrats on fundraising, and we've blown it all? They've got nothing left. And then Rick Scott went off to Europe on a vacation instead of being here while his candidates are all struggling. Republican Party, we told you this when the idiot who was the as the head of Columbia HCA, Health Corporation of America, was guilty of the largest Medicare fraud perpetrated on the U.S. government in history. He pleaded the fifth 75 times on the stand. He's horrible. But see, that's the Republican thing. You guys just don't care who you elect. And now the senior senator of Florida is Marco Rubio. So, you know, for the last 24 hours, the Republican Party has been freaking out over what Lindsey Graham did yesterday, introducing a bill that's a national abortion ban after 15 weeks. This is after the pushback that they've been experiencing since the Supreme Extreme Court ruling. And they're all trying to walk it back. They're all scrubbing their websites of any reference to, to abortion bans. And Lindsey Graham's like, I know, we'll do a national one. What? And if you vote for us, if you vote us in control, if we take back Congress, we'll have a vote on it.
I look forward to the debate. I look forward to the vote. If we take back the House and the Senate, I can assure you we'll have a vote on our bill. If the Democrats are in charge, I don't know if we'll ever have a vote on our bill.
Thank you. So that, Lindsey Graham gave the Democrats an ad that they can run for the next 8 weeks until Election Day. Because I know a lot of women who will do anything to keep these cretins from imposing their will on our bodies. That's rape. You impose your will on my body, that's rape. And women, yeah, we're not big fans of rape. So what did Marco Rubio do today? Well, let me read to you from the Orlando Sentinel. Republican U.S. Senator Marco Rubio has signed on as a co-sponsor to Lindsey Graham's bill that would ban abortions at 15 weeks in any state that doesn't already have tighter restrictions. I guess I should play like a sad trombone. Do I even have one? Not really. Oh, I do. Okay, let's do this. The bill introduced yesterday by Lindsey Graham has been criticized by some Republican senators and candidates as politically damaging. Democrats, including Rubio's opponent in the November 8th election, Val Demings, have seized on the abortion issue in the wake of the Supreme Court's overturning of Roe v. Wade in June. Rubio telling reporters, I've always been pro-life. Democrats won't vote for any restriction of any kind on abortion. Okay, well, that's not true. But lying when it comes to what Democrats believe about abortions, that's like breathing for these Republicans. Actually, lying about anything is like breathing for them. They don't understand the difference, or they just don't care. That's how little they think of you, that they lie about everything. And the funny, you know, not funny haha, but funny strange, the funniest thing about their lies is when they tell us what we're thinking. Like, okay, I got two clips that were from today. This, first of all, the primaries wrapped up last night. There were races in Rhode Island, Delaware, and New Hampshire. That's the end of primary season. Now it's on to the general election. Well, in New Hampshire, you know, they only have two congressional seats. And the Republicans nominated the more extreme, or to use their word, radical, of the candidates. Now, it's off topic for today, but we will go there another day, maybe even this week, on the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee and Sean Patrick Maloney spending millions of dollars to boost these cretinous, is that the word? Republican candidates, the extreme of the extreme. I get it. They think that those people will be easier to beat than the more so-called moderate candidates. Just remember, they thought that Trump would be easier to beat, too. I don't know why they're playing these stupid games, but again, that's not the topic for today. We'll get there another day, because that pisses me off. But anyway, one of the Republican nominees for one of the two House seats up in New Hampshire is a woman named Caroline Leavitt. And here's what Caroline Leavitt said. We, Democratic women, Democrats, this is what she believes, we think, what we want regarding abortion.
Well, I am pro-life, but I'm also pro-Constitution, and I believe in our United States Supreme Court, which just said that this is an issue for the states to decide. Here in the Grand Estate, we just passed the first ban in our state's history. I applaud our state legislators for doing that, and I hope the people of our state will continue to elect great state legislatures here at the state level to make those decisions. We have a greater voice. Okay. But let me just say, my far-left Democrat extremist opponent, Chris Pappas, is radical on this issue.
Really?
He and his party support abortion up until the moment of birth,
what?
Anytime, anywhere taxpayer funded. That's not where the majority of the people in this state reside.
Excuse me.
They are the party of radical extremism, and I'm so sick of the Democrats trying to paint we as conservatives who believe in life and who believe in states' rights.
Oh, shut the fuck up. I'm so sick of these Republican, you know, mental midgets who don't know what we think, yet decide to tell the world what we think. What did she say? We want my Democrat friends.
Legislatures here at the state level to make those decisions. We have a greater voice. But let me just say, my far-left Democrat extremist opponent, Chris Pappas, is radical on this issue.
Right?
He and his party support abortion up until the moment of birth, anytime, anywhere, taxpayer-funded.
That's not where... Shit! That is just so not true. But that's what they all say. So that was this wannabe congresswoman, the nominee for the Republicans in New Hampshire. Okay, so she's not in Congress. She doesn't really know. She's just spouting the talking points they give her. How about John Cornyn, senator from Texas, senior senator from Texas? How about him? What would John Cornyn say that Democrats want in by way of abortion? This is John Cornyn this morning.
Our Democratic colleagues don't believe in any restriction on abortion up until the time the baby is delivered. That's an extreme point of view not shared by any civilized place on the planet.
And not shared by any Democrats. John Cornyn, again, you lie. Again, what did he say?
Our Democratic colleagues don't believe in any restriction on abortion
Up
until the time a baby is delivered.
That's
an extreme point of view not shared by any civilized place on the planet.
Okay, but it goes on and on. I could spend the rest of this until Tom Hartman gets here playing these idiots for you who keep repeating the same lie. How about it, Raphael?
The Democrats know that, but they're creating straw men. You know, you look at how extreme they are. Take a look at Ralph Northam, the former governor of Virginia. Up until just a year ago, he was governor of Virginia.
Take a look at him, okay?
He is also a physician. He did a radio interview where he argued not just for abortion up until the moment of birth, but horrifyingly, he argued for post-birth abortion, which is just flat-out murder in any language. He described how he would deliver a child, he would comfort the child would be breathing, crying outside the womb, and then he would have a conversation with the parents about what to do with that child. In other words, whether or not to kill the infant he had just delivered. That is truly horrifying stuff.
Lie, lie, lie.
Senator, great to see you.
Senator, great to see you, Laura Ingraham says. After he lies, lie, 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 lie. You need another one? This was in front of Congress, testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee on these abortion laws. This is a woman named Cassie Smedley. Somehow the name fits her. Cassie Smedley, executive director of, what's the name of this organization? America Rising. America Rising. Rising from what? Anyway, Cassie Smedley, why don't you tell us what we think? Please, because I'm dying to hear it.
This is a dark and disturbing morning for America.
Oh, that's
the elections
Chuck Schumer.
This November will have consequences.
Okay.
Because the rights of 100 million women are now on the ballot.
You don't
to help
sound like
fight
Cassie
this
Smedley,
court's
Chuck.
Awful decision. I urge every American to make their voices heard this week and this year.
Okay.
Cassie, could I first get your reaction to that?
Cassie Smedley.
Yeah, I think as a pro-life person, you say, what about the rights of the tens of millions of unborn babies that have been released?
Okay, I need to pause it because obviously this was not in the senatorial testimony. That's the next clip. But this, she's on, obviously, on Fox and being asked what she thought about what Chuck Schumer said, which is true. Okay, pick it up from there, Cassie.
As a pro-life person, you say, what about the rights of the tens of millions of unborn babies that have been relentlessly under attack by the left for decades now? We are We are not talking about the same conversation that happened 40 years ago. Today's Democrats are advocating, in many cases, for the rights to have an abortion beyond the birth of the child. And
no,
most Americans
not.
Would say that's not something that sits well with me. And so for Democrats to go out on the campaign trail, if they want to put all their eggs in this basket and have this conversation about a much more aggressive, to have a much more aggressive conversation about this issue, I think that will be at their own political peril, because it is so far out of step with where most Americans feel on this very sensitive issue.
Oh, Kevin, you look at the time.
Cassie Smedley, she said that women, Democratic women, want access to abortion up until after the baby is born. That's what she said, right? I'm not going crazy, right?
For decades now, we are not talking about the same conversation that happened 40 years ago.
What are
Today's
we talking about?
Democrats are advocating, in many cases, for the rights to have an abortion beyond the birth of the child.
Bullshit.
No, we are not. That is
bullshit.
It's complete and utter bullshit, yet they keep saying it. You know why? Because these geniuses that are interviewing them don't come out and say that's
bullshit.
It's bullshit. But we're not done yet. This is Catherine Glenn Foster. She's the CEO of That America Rising. She was the one who was testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Abortion activism always requires euphemism and misdirection. Why? Because of the violent nature of abortion.
Oh my
Because
God.
It is, frankly, inconvenient.
You're
Human
inconvenient.
Persons, from their earliest days, poisoned in the womb and dismembered, torn limb from limb.
It's like she's getting off on
Bodies
this.
Bodies thrown in medical waste bins
what?
And in places like Washington, D.C., burned to power the lights
what?
Of the city's homes and streets. Let that image sink in with you for a
because
moment.
Because it's a bullshit.
Bullshit.
The next time you turn on the light, think of the incinerators.
What?
Think of what we're doing to ourselves so callously and so numbly.
Okay, I had to know where that came from. So I went looking. I did a little bit of like Snopesing. And yes, so here's a story from May 19th, this year. That was this year. The headline reads, "Witness tells Congress that aborted fetuses are burned to power the lights of D.C. homes and streets." Oh, she was a different, Catherine Glenn Foster is the president and CEO of Americans United for Life. Different organization from Americans Rising. Who knew? And, oh, it was the House Judiciary Committee. Sorry, not the Senate Judiciary Committee. I hate when I get things wrong. But when I get something wrong, it's like that. I thought it was the Senate Judiciary Committee. It's the House. I'm not claiming that Republicans are burning babies to power American cities, because they're not. At one point, she claimed discarded fetuses help power Washington, D.C. So, I'm reading from Mediaite, which is certainly no left-wing publication and not my favorite go-to, but that's what came up when I did the search. Okay, what they were able to find out is there's no there. It's complete
bullshit.
Right, but they said it's possible. Foster is alluding to the fact that some jurisdictions use various forms of waste, including medical waste, to convert into electricity. For example, in 2013, Washington, D.C. unveiled an energy system that uses human feces to generate power. So let me get this straight. Is this woman, the head of Americans United for Life, she's calling discarded, aborted fetus tissue shit? That's what she's saying, isn't it? See, this is what they do. They put words into our mouths. But wait, there's more. And we'll finish up strong. Our governor, the man who wants to be reelected, you know, the one I call moron death sentence, that guy, he, some weeks ago, signed a 15-week abortion bill into law here in Florida because he's one of them. And is he man enough to tell the truth? Come on, we're talking about death sentence here. What do you think?
The far left of our political spectrum, they are now taking the position that babies can be aborted up to the ninth month.
No, we're not.
Literally, you can go back for you parents parents, and those are some of the most significant experiences.
Really?
I had to hold your child for the very first time. What they would say is, parent holding that child, if you just go back a day or two, then you would have been able to snuff the child out entirely.
Right.
That is just fundamentally wrong. That is infanticide.
That's infanticide. Oh, listen to all those brilliant Floridians cheering him on. It's not infanticide. It's
bullshit.
Because it's bullshit. Really, people, when do we start calling them out for this crap? You just going to let them keep telling this lie over and over again? When does it end? This is just astounding. Astounding. Jamie Raskin spoke on the floor of the House this morning.
Now, originally, they said, well, Roe versus Wade is settled precedent. We accept that. Then they packed the court with their justices who were determined, hell-bent on overturning Roe versus Wade, and they did it. Then we heard from our friends across the aisle, well, this is a matter for the states. Let the states decide. And now we hear from our colleagues in Congress, no, they want a national criminal ban on the right of women to make their own decisions about their health, their families, their careers, and their futures. And then they will even allow states to go beyond that to completely ban abortion, which is, of course, the essential pro-life position, which we've heard from our colleagues across the aisle. That's what they're focused on.
That's what they're focused on. That and lying to you every time they open their mouths. The Democrats, those radical Democrats, they want abortion up to the time of birth and beyond. No. So I've got a little song for all of these cretins who want to put words into our mouths and tell the American people what we think. And it's the opposite of that. This is opposite world. So John Cornyn, Caroline Leavitt, Ted fucking Cruz, Cassie Smedley, Catherine Glenn Foster, moron death sentence, and the rest of you fucking lying Republicans, this song is for you.
I just need you to shut the fuck up, cause nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch.
Everybody's saying,
shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up, bow, bow. Shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up, bow, bow. Shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up, bow, bow.
And, you know, yesterday when I was railing against Lindsey Graham, who, it's just opposite world. This is a man who, as far as we know, has never impregnated anyone. He's probably never had sex with a woman. Not that there's anything wrong with that unless you're working against the interests of your community. Yeah. Lindsey Graham, you know, also, he said this just last month. It was just a month ago, he said.
I've been consistent. I think states should decide the issue of marriage and states should decide the issue of abortion.
Oh,
I have respect for South Carolina. South Carolina voters here, I trust to define marriage and to deal with the issue of abortion, not nine people on the court. That's my view.
How far down should that, I mean, how wide should that go? How many more issues should that
go
to? For example, Loving versus Virginia, that allowed interracial marriage? That shouldn't be touched.
No, so here's the point. We're talking about things that are not happening because you don't want to talk about inflation. You don't want to talk about crime. This is all politics, my friends. Instead of trying to solve problems like unstable people having guns, we're talking about constitutional decisions that are still in effect. But if you're going to ask me to have the federal government take over defining marriage, yeah, I'm going to say no.
But that's what he's doing. It was a month later. That was August 7th. Yesterday was September 13th. So what changed, Lindsay? All right, I wasn't going to take a phone call here because I got Tom Hartman standing by. But very quickly, caller. Hi, who's this?
This is Robert in Long Beach.
Hey, Robert in Long Beach. Real quick, because I got Tom Hartman standing by. So what's on your mind?
Okay, nothing. I think the reason why the Republicans are in such disarray is probably because they're afraid that their phones are being wiretapped by the FBI because of all the nuisance and all the law breaking that's been going on their part. Now, You remember that the Russians also, we found out that the Russians had been giving $300 million to political campaigns. So you never know.
You never know. But that's not the cause of the lies. I just played for 20 minutes a string of one Republican after another saying Democrats, those radical Democrats, they want abortion on demand, paid for by taxpayers, up until the moment of birth and beyond. And yet nobody, none of those people who were interviewing them called them out and said,
bullshit.
Not one of them. And that's what they need to do. Because I'm sick of this
already.
We
have billionaires paying millionaires as pundits to lie to people, you know? And that's really what we have here in this country.
That's what it is. All right, Robert, thank you for the call. Good to hear from you.
All right.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right. I think this is a good time. Any time's a good time to talk to Tom Hartman, right? So let's bring in Tom Hartman. The occasion is yet another book. Tom Hartman, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Nicole. Thanks for inviting me.
It's always good to see you. And I always get excited when I hear there's another Hidden History volume coming out because I always get the chance to talk again. This one, I think, is number 8. It's The Hidden History of Neoliberalism, How Reaganism Gutted America and How to Restore Its Greatness. This is the 8th one, right?
Yeah.
And how many will there be in total?
Well, I'm just finishing up the next one, which is The Hidden History of American Democracy. And as far as I know, that'll be the last one.
But not your last book, because you've written many books before the Hidden History series. So we'll see. I guess we figure it out as we go along.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. I originally this was supposed to be a 4-book series.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah, we just keep adding books.
Well, you know what? Knowledge, information is so important because we live in an age of just utter disinformation. I seriously, since I came on the air a half hour ago, I've been playing clip after clip after clip of these Republicans who state as fact that what we want is access to taxpayer-paid abortion on demand up until, and this is a quote, up until delivery and beyond.
Oh, Lynn Cheney said that a short while ago.
Right.
Up until the moment of birth is what Lynn Cheney said. And I'm like, what?
Yeah. I have Ted Cruz saying it. John Cornyn said it today.
He's quote one Democrat.
Right. Not exactly. They're telling us what we think. Sorry. I don't know. I don't appreciate anybody putting words in my mouth. But when you lie, it's just lies. It's nonstop lies. So good explanations of what we're living through are important. And one of the things I love about your books, Tom, is you write, well, in your voice. And we're used to your voice from the radio. And I can hear your voice in all your books. I mean, not just the Hidden History books, but the ones before that, too. And I've read a number of them. And so it's your calm and reasoned voice that explains in a clear way what you're trying to explain without all this other stuff, the lies that we're subjected to on a daily basis. So I appreciate it. So neoliberalism, this is an interesting topic, if only because the term neoliberalism. Now, I remember back in the days of the George W. Bush and the invasion of Iraq and the invasion of Afghanistan. And the term that was most often thrown around were these neocons. The neocons are doing this. So neoconservatives. All right. So I wrapped my head around that. And then all of a sudden I started hearing about neoliberalism. Can you please explain the definition of these isms and what is the difference between them? And why does neoliberalism have nothing to do with liberals like me and you?
Yeah. Well, first of all, neoconservatism is just the Barry Goldwater variety of, let's kick the world's ass conservatives, the militaristic, never saw a war they didn't love, send John Negroponte off to another country to start death squads conservatives.
Yeah.
Liberalism in Europe as an economic and political philosophy is what we would call libertarianism here, or conservative economics. And the guys who invented neoliberalism were all, with the exception of Milton Friedman, Europeans. And what they wanted to do, they met in Switzerland in 1947 and came up with this They were looking for a solution to how to invent or how to harden Western countries, European countries, in a way that would prevent them from either becoming communist like the Soviet Union had or Russia had into the Soviet Union, or fascist like Italy, Spain, and Germany had the war that they had just finished fighting. And being economists, they kind of illustrate Abraham Maslow, you know, the famous psychologist's old maxim that when the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem in the world looks like a nail. They assumed that economics would be the solution to everything. And so they came up with this idea that, you know, the economy should run the country rather than the other way around, that the major actors in the economy, the most successful corporations and the richest billionaires, because they had gone through this Darwinian natural selection process and shown that they were the smartest and the brightest and the most competent, should not have to pay taxes, should not be regulated, should be basically the ones running the country and making the rules, which is nuts when you think about it.
Yes. But,
you know, this was their idea, that government should abandon its regulatory, its protective functions of regulation. Deregulation is a real big thing for them. Because regulation warps the marketplace, the so-called free market. They felt that labor unions were another interference in the free market, and therefore labor unions should be marginalized or minimalized or basically turned into social clubs. They felt that corporations should be able to travel anywhere in the world and find the cheapest labor possible, which is kind of a corollary to the previous one. We call that global free trade. There's nothing free about it.
No.
It's basically the arbitrage of labor. They believed that the social safety net, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, the Social Security, unemployment insurance, minimum wage, food stamps, school lunch programs, all of this stuff was an inappropriate interference in the marketplace. In fact, Hayek argued in one of his books that because Germany got the first single payer healthcare system in the world in 1888, you and I talked about this when my book on healthcare came out. That set Germany up for the Nazis. It was the social safety net that made Germans vulnerable to Nazism. And so end the social safety net, privatize Social Security and Medicare. And of course, George W. Bush started that process. He has, you know, his Medicare Advantage scam has privatized fully half of Medicare now.
Yeah.
They believed that because the billionaires and the largest, most successful corporations were the major survivors, winners of this Darwinian evolutionary process, they should not be impeded in their ability to participate in the marketplace by these pedestrian concerns like taxes, which is why today billionaires in America, the 700 plus billionaires in America on average pay around 3% in income taxes, and corporations, about half of the Fortune 500 corporations pay basically nothing in income taxes. They believe that everything that the government does could be done by a private corporation and should be done by a private corporation. So they were, you know, promoting privatization. And as a consequence of this, you know, half of our electricity is now provided for by for-profit corporations, mm-hmm. who provide higher prices, lower service, and less reliable electricity, for example. I mean, right. You know, among other things. And they said that monopolies and massive wealth inequality were not social ills, that these were actually signs that the marketplace was working properly. So that's the essence of the argument that the neoliberal economists made in the 40s when they formulated this idea. And, you know, they were largely considered crackpots until the 70s. And then we had this horrible inflation from the Arab oil embargo. And Milton Friedman was... had a heavy, heavy duty PR machine behind him. He was in every newspaper in America every week for years in the 70s, wrote a syndicated column. He was constantly being profiled in Parade magazine, right. And Newsweek and Time. And he came out and said, you know, the solution to inflation is neoliberalism. You need to do this. And so Reagan put it into place in 81, and we've been living in a neoliberal world now for 42 years.
It's astounding. And reading your history of it is just, you know, it comes back because we're of an age. Now, I remember the early 70s. I was young, but I remember inflation. I can't help but wonder, here we are, it's 50 years later, and inflation again. It brings up memories of, or instances of, Naomi Klein's shock doctrine. When we have a shock to the system, whether it be an economic shock or a physical major natural disaster, whatever, that's when these forces come in and wipe everything out and start. They use that as an excuse to impose their belief, their will, or neoliberalism on the society that is having their rights taken away. Is that, am I off base here?
You're absolutely right. In fact, I quote her in my book. Her book, Shock Doctrine, it's a little out of date now, but it's a brilliant book about neoliberalism.
Right.
And as she specifies in the book, but it's basically the history of neoliberalism in the United States, Iraq, Russia, and Chile. And she does just an absolutely brilliant job of laying it out.
So as we're seeing the world now be hit with the ravages of climate change, the things that we're seeing, these 1,000-year storms that are now happening once or twice a year in each individual location, that these things are manifesting, becoming reality. Pakistan, half the country, 2/3 of the country is underwater. This leaves fertile ground for a system to come in and take over and for them to impose their will on the people. Things weren't great in Pakistan before. I can't imagine that they're ever going to recover.
It's going to be a real challenge. I mean, you're looking at tens of millions of people who are facing ultimately famine over the short term. They're facing, you know, cholera and typhoid and the loss of their crops. And what's so ironic about it and tragic is that Pakistan produces less than 1% of the world's carbon emissions. Yet it was the carbon emissions largely of the United States that caused this problem. I frankly believe that Pakistan should be able to sue in some sort of world court venue the oil and coal companies that have been lying to us for 60 years about the predictable consequences of continuing our addiction to their products.
Right. The problem is it would hurt you and me and the people, you know, the poor working schmuck who's paying our taxes at a high rate and not the billionaires who have all this money, who can afford to pay and help clean up things and set us on a course that doesn't end with, you know, annihilation. But they're not doing that. In fact, what they do is want to cut taxes more.
Right. I mean, just the five biggest oil companies just showed a quarterly profit of over $50 billion. So I think they could, $50 billion would go a hell of a long way in Pakistan.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not that much here, but it would go a long way in Pakistan.
Wow. And that's just one place that we're talking about. This is happening all over the world. And even here in the U.S., where the West is in a historic drought, what's not burning is drying up. Salt Lake City, the Great Salt Lake, is drying up and causing horrible air problems because the reaction of the salt beds, or I don't know the science of it, but I know the air quality,
the dust off the surface is blowing into the city.
And everywhere you look, there are issues like this. I mean, and depending on your geographic location, I'm in Florida. You know, South Beach is underwater at high tide. And yet, what are they doing? They continue to build high rises at the beach. It's just they refuse to deal with what's going on. And, you know, you read through your book. Again, we're talking with Tom Hartman about the hidden history of neoliberalism. And you point out that it got started right around the 40s. Well, up until Ronald Reagan, the wealthy, and we didn't have billionaires at the time, paid their fair share of taxes. They paid something that, you know, made them, again, fair share, not what they're doing now. Ronald Reagan brought down the tax rate from the high end to, what, 25%?
74% down to 25%. That only lasted for 1 year. Then he took it back up to 27 and ultimately, I think, 29%. But yeah, it was dramatic. And you know, prior to that, wealthy people didn't take typically CEOs, you know, typically didn't take more than 30 times what their lowest paid employee made. They lived in the same communities, in many cases, the same neighborhoods as the people who worked for them. I mean, they had fancier houses, but, you know, they weren't living in these 30 room mansions like today, and didn't have private jets and yachts and stuff like that. And you had a top corporate tax rate of 53%. So corporations had a strong incentive to avoid paying taxes by investing in their companies, by investing in research and development, by developing new products, by paying their employees better, by offering new benefits, by opening new factories or new operations in different cities, expanding their businesses, advertising. All these things are tax deductible expenses. And companies used to do all those things to avoid paying that top income tax rate. Well, now, you know, about half of the big companies in America pay nothing in taxes.
Right.
And they're not doing those things that I just described any longer. In fact, they're fighting them tooth and nail, trying to stop unionization, trying to stop the minimum wage and everything else. All so that they can take all this money now, you know, now that they're not paying taxes, they can take all this money and stuff it in the money bins of their CEOs, their senior executives, their board of directors, and their major stockholders.
So, but they, you know, you'd think they can't deny history. All you have to do is look and see how our society worked, how our economy prospered during those years. And until the tax burden got so out of whack to where the people who are truly working for a living are paying the bulk of it, struggling to pay it, and the wealthiest among us aren't. But is that sort of like, you know, what they're doing with the abortion issue? They lie because they can? They're rewriting the history books because they can?
I mean, in my book, I take a slightly more charitable view, you know, assuming that because neoliberalism in its current incarnation, or its 1940s, 50s, 60s incarnation, had not been really tried, although the Pinochet experiment in 1973 in Chile went terribly wrong. But, you know, that Reagan and Clinton, when they both embraced neoliberalism, and Bush, Herbert Walker Bush actually thought it was voodoo economics, but, you know, he shut his mouth when he got the job as vice president. But that they were willing to give it a try. They thought, well, you know, what can it hurt? And it makes sense. And these guys are economists. They should know what they're doing. You know, I think by 2016, Americans had figured out it was a scam. And that's why Donald Trump was able to get lots and lots of people to vote for him by saying that he was going to reverse neoliberalism. You'll recall he campaigned on raising taxes on rich people. He said it was going to be so bad that his friends wouldn't talk to him anymore.
Oh,
and he
right.
was going to get a nosebleed, remember?
Yes.
And he was lying, of course. He said he was going to regulate corporate behavior. He was lying, of course. He said he was going to encourage the growth of labor unions and support labor again. He was lying through his teeth. He said he was going to bring back jobs from overseas. Instead, he goes to China and gets patents for his daughter.
Right.
Again, he was lying through his teeth. So, you know, but there were a lot of Americans. I knew some people who voted for Donald Trump because they thought that he was going to break neoliberalism. And they saw Hillary Clinton as just another neoliberal apologist, you know, who wanted to perpetuate her husband's policies of free trade and low taxes and the end of welfare as we know it. And I get that. I totally get that. So I really think 2016 was kind of the turning point for most Americans, although it didn't work out the way that we had hoped or the way the voters had hoped. And I'm really happy now to see Joe Biden, President Biden, aggressively trashing neoliberalism. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't use the word much, but he's talking about raising taxes on billionaires. He's talking about he just got past a 15% minimum corporate tax. That's a BFD if there ever
that
was.
That really is. And that didn't get a whole lot of attention. It should have gotten more.
Yeah, absolutely. He's talking about breaking up monopolies. He's talking about bringing back free education, free college. He's talking about, you know, a national health care program. He wants to raise the minimum wage. These are all direct attacks on neoliberalism.
Without a doubt. Hey, Tom Hartman, my husband, David, chimes in from time to time. It's the benefit or the drawback of a home studio. Anyway, David's got a question for you. David, meet Tom.
Hi, Tom. I've been a fan of yours for a long time. Nice to meet you this way. At any rate, I have a question. My question is, how much of the Trump tax cuts, how much of the current inflation that we are suffering through has been caused by the Trump tax cuts? Because I'm sure one of the parts of the economics class I took in college that I did not sleep through was when they said that inflation is caused by too many dollars chasing too few goods. And the combination of those Trump tax cuts with the supply chain issues created by COVID, I think, is what's responsible for what we're going through now. And I'd like to get your opinion on it.
I hadn't considered that, David. You know, given that the Trump tax cuts, 87% of them went to the top 1% of Americans,
right?
And major corporations, and by and large, that money just gets stuffed in their money bins. I mean, you know, they put it in their offshore accounts, or they put it into treasuries, and therefore, it's not recirculating through the economy,
huh.
which could arguably be inflationary. So I'm not certain. I mean, feel free to elaborate on the logic there, but I think that, frankly, what we're looking at are supply chain issues, number two. Number one is the price of oil going up, and that was the result of Trump sending Jared Kushner over in 2020 to negotiate with Mohammed bin Salman to drop Saudi oil production because you had oil operators in Texas literally going bankrupt. And the Saudis dropped their oil production by 2.7 million barrels a day, and it's still cut. You know, they've raised it a couple hundred thousand barrels a day, but they're still thumbing their nose at Biden. And the supply chain. Oh, and the fact that we have a monopoly, you know, because of neoliberalism, you've got giant monopolies, basically oligopolies. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not a single industry in America that's not 80% controlled by fewer than five companies, period. And the result of that is that they don't charge prices in response to competition or competitive prices. They charge prices based on what the market will bear. They squeeze as much as you can out of people. And so, you know, they just started jacking up their prices like crazy because there was a fair amount of money floating around after COVID because people had just spent a year,
arguably two years, not
buying anything.
Right.
So you want to elaborate, David?
He's already back inside. He works out and listens to the show. So he just comes in here with a question. It's like, I'll take the answer off the air.
All right, thank you. So he
did bring that up last night when we were talking. Here's the thing, the other thing that the media doesn't really elaborate on. The Republicans are screaming about, you know, it's all inflation, it's all Joe Biden, it's the, you know, he's responsible for the price of gas. Well, first of all, the president has nothing to do really with the price of gas. Second of all, inflation is not a uniquely American issue. This is a global problem right now, and I think it is the supply chain, and it is COVID. We all went through this together. It's not just us. You can't put it on Joe Biden, right?
And it's the price of oil. I mean, you know, the price of oil going over $100 a barrel. Right. That, you know, the last time that happened was 1973 when we had the Arab oil embargo, and the price of oil tripled in 2 weeks. And the result of that was that horrible inflation throughout the 70s.
Right. So, and now the inflation in Europe is through the roof. England is particularly in bad shape, worse off than we are. But I don't hear our media saying, well, look what's going on there. Look what's going on in France. Look what they don't talk about it. It's just here and a uniquely American problem when it isn't.
Yeah, in the Baltic states, I mean, Latvia is 73% inflation right now because they, you know, they depend on Russia for so much of their their fossil fuels.
Right. So here's the question. I know you do give solutions in the book, Tom, that, you know, there is a way to get past this. And maybe if we would enact some of these policies that Joe Biden, kind of by way of Bernie Sanders, is trying to help pass, we could get some relief. But we're still being lied to by these people who lie about everything. Are we at the point of no return? I worry that we're not going to be able to recover from this.
I think that America has awakened to the poison of neoliberalism, or you could call it Reaganomics, supply side economics, trickle down economics. And like I said, I think 2016 was the sign of that, you know, Donald Trump getting as many votes as he did, even though he really won because he had help from Russia. But I think Bernie is the chairman of the budget committee. They
That's
write
right.
all this legislation, and mm-hmm. he's, you know, big deal now. But Joe Biden is calling out neoliberalism right to its face. He doesn't use the word much because most Americans don't even know what it means.
Right.
He's talking about raising taxes. He just got this 15% tax on corporations. He's talking about, you know, bringing back our jobs from overseas. He's talking about re-empowering labor unions. He's talking about, you know, low cost or free education. He's taking on drug prices and healthcare. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff there.
Right.
He's, you know, raised the minimum wage.
And I'm glad he's saying these things. But unfortunately, with I'm pointing a lot of fingers at the corporate media today because they are enabling the lies, the fact that they don't push back against their Democrats want abortion to the time of birth. Nonsense. They should unequivocally say, no, that's not the case. But now in this day of CNN becoming fairer to the Republicans, it seems like they're afraid to state fact as fact. And I think that is really hurting us.
Yeah, that's not new. I mean, you know, they've been doing this, you know, I've been screaming about this since the 70s, frankly. You know, Republicans just coming out and lying through their teeth. Reagan was really good at it. And, you know, and then you'd find some little article on page 17 of the New York Times going, well, it turns out that Reagan was all BS, but, you know what he said last week. I'm actually optimistic, Nicole. I think Americans are waking up you know, to a whole lot of things. You know, the fact that for 4 years we had an agent of a foreign government in the White House, for example. You know, there's some. I see some good signs.
Right. I'm okay. I'm sorry. David's back. So what? Yes, David. Go ahead.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, Nicole's right. I do exercise, and I needed to just finish my last set. At any rate, so here's my stab at answering your question, answering my question. I believe, I agree with you 100% that what happened with the money from the Trump tax cuts, it went to the 1%. And what did they do with it? They invested it. A lot of what they invested went to hedge funds. And a lot of those hedge funds, what did they do with the money? They went around and they did something they hadn't done before. They started buying residential housing. And the price of housing went through the roof. And that was what, in my opinion, was the first brick in the wall, so to speak, of what created this inflation, because when you have to start paying more for rent, then everything goes up to make it possible for people to pay rent, and adjustable rate mortgages go up. And then, like you said, the price of oil went through the roof as well. But I believe it was the money that these 1%ers invested with hedge funds that turned around and got invested in residential housing. Again, something they had not done before, that I believe was the first step in that downward spiral.
I had not connected that to the tax cuts, but it makes perfect sense. I had just always figured that they, you know, they're always looking for a new scam, these hedge funds, and getting into residential real estate was the latest one.
And down here, that's very apparent. I mean, you cannot buy a house in South Florida. You can't rent an apartment in South Florida. And I don't know if you just saw this. I read somewhere today that the average cost of for a rental of a one-bedroom apartment is something along the lines of $1,800 nationally. But the average person doesn't take home, you know, enough money to justify that payment in their paycheck. So we're headed for, if we're not already there, we are at that housing crisis that I think is going to, look, we have to move. We've got to be out of here by December 1st. I don't know where we're going to go because there's nothing affordable, not only here in South Florida, but in all the other places I'm looking. Affordable housing does not exist. And we've been looking in Arizona. I've been looking in Colorado. I've looked in New Mexico just to price out what a rental on a two-bedroom house would be.
Yeah. It's pretty stiff here, too. I think the median house value in Portland right now is like $570.
Oh, yeah. I looked in Portland as well because there was a job I was looking at there. And the guy who, you know, I was talking to, he's like, look, this is not, you know, this job doesn't come with a huge salary. And I don't think it would be economically feasible for you to move here because you couldn't afford the rent.
Yeah.
Flat out. Yeah, so this is a crisis. There are people who are now being put out of their homes because their rents are doubling. There's no rent control down here. So this is another part of the crisis. And yet the Republicans will, you know, look at you and lie. And the projection is what they do. You know, they project. They say the things that they ascribe to us is exactly what they're doing. I need to get a psychologist on here to really talk about that phenomenon. Yeah.
By and large, it's absolutely true.
I know. It's scary times we're living in. I hope to take a little bit of your optimism, Tom Hartman, because we could all use some of that right now. The book is The Hidden History of Neoliberalism, How Reaganism Gutted America, and How to Restore Its Greatness. I'll take that second half of that and try to hold you to it. Not really, but, you know, try to take the attitude anyway and the feeling, because I tell you, it's hard to be optimistic these days.
Yeah, I get it. Where there's some real challenges, real struggles, and particularly with climate change, you know, kind of putting everything on steroids. And yet, I would never discount, you know, human ingenuity and the desire of people to bounce back to normalcy.
Can you figure out why so many people still just support the former guy and the lies and just have?
I think at least half of it is racism.
I think you're right.
That's it. I mean, you know, that's you know, and then there's a large element of tribalism too, but that's that, I think most of that is racially based. Wow. I think the main fuel for the Republican Party is racism, pure and simple.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Donald Trump gave them license to wear it, to come out of the closet as the racists they are.
Nixon's Southern strategy.
Oh, okay. Tom Hartman, thank you so much. It's always an eye opener. I love talking to you. I love listening to you. So, Tom Hartman. All right. We'll talk again soon. I hope for the next one.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Tom Hartman, of course, find him on the radio every day for 3 hours, still doing it old school, from noon to three where I'm at. And of course, at TomHartman.com and author of about a million books. All right. With that, we're done. That's a Wednesday. Stick a fork in it. It's done. Tomorrow, it's Thursday, and Howie Klein will be here. All right. And with that, we are done. Thank you for listening, everyone. He is, Joy says, one of the smartest guys on the radio. He's just one of the smartest guys. Seriously. I had a story. I figured it was best not to tell him because, you know, what happens is, now we're in overtime. I can give you a quick story. So I've had this book for about a month, maybe 6 weeks, knowing that this was coming up. But I don't read them too far in advance because I forget. I am an adult ADD sufferer. I was a kid who was sent home with notes all the time. Nikki daydreams. I was Nikki as a kid. Nikki daydreams. She's very smart, but she daydreams. I was a daydreamer. ADD. So I wait until, you know, the week of, and then I read as much of it as I can. I generally usually don't get through most of the books that I interview because I do a lot of them. And with my eyes the last few weeks, I was at a disadvantage as well. So anyway, I took the book with me. We had to go into Fort Lauderdale on Friday of last week. So I put the book in my bag. I thought I'll read some in the car, but my eye was still kind of messed up. And I must have put it down in the car. And then when I went looking for it this weekend so I could read some of it, I couldn't find it anywhere. And, you know, Tom has written books on ADD. He says it's not an affliction. I guess it's all in how you look at it. It's all perception. Perception is reality. But I almost had to call his publicist and say, is there a PDF of the book online that I can see? Because I didn't get the chance to read it, and now I can't find it. And I tore this house apart. And if you saw the way I leave my stuff everywhere, you would know that's a chore. And then David said, could it be in the car? And sure enough, it had fallen between the seat and the console. But I found it, and I got to read some of it. I'll leave you with the news, and I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks for supporting the show. I really, really appreciate it. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The 2022 primary election season came to a close on Tuesday with New Hampshire, Rhode Island, and Delaware casting the final primary votes before we all head to the polls on November 8th in an election that'll determine which party will control the House and Senate for the next 2 years. A lot of attention is on New Hampshire, where Republicans nominated Don Budak to take on the vulnerable Democratic Senator Maggie Hassan in November. Hassan won by just 1,000 votes in 2016, and Republicans have seen New Hampshire as a potential pickup opportunity in their bid to control the Senate. It's currently split 50-50. Budak is a retired Army general. He beat out the more moderate state Senate President Chuck Morse. Democrats ran ads in the Republican primary attacking Morse, signaling that the party believed the MAGA-adjacent Budak would be an easier general election opponent for Hassan. Budak didn't receive Trump's endorsement, but he strongly supports Trump's false claims of widespread voter fraud during the 2020 election. Budak also called the New Hampshire Republican Governor Chris Sununu a, quote, communist Chinese sympathizer. Huh? Sununu, who endorsed Morse, told reporters last week that he'd back Budak over Hassan if he was the nominee. Onward to the general. The Labor Department on Tuesday reported that the Consumer Price Index rose 8.3% in August compared to a year earlier, though that's down from 8.5% in July and 9.1% in June. prices still rose 0.1 percentage point month to month, picking up after staying steady in July. Economists had expected that falling gas prices and other factors would pull down the inflation numbers a little bit, but that wasn't the case. And the news sent stocks plunging on expectations of even more aggressive interest rate hikes by the Fed coming soon, giving us the worst day on Wall Street since June of 2020. On the abortion front, lawmakers in West Virginia passed a bill on Tuesday that would prohibit nearly all abortions except to save the life of the mother or in certain cases that involved rape or incest. This bill would significantly limit access to abortion in a state where the procedure is currently legal up to 20 weeks. It now heads to the Republican governor's desk for a signature. In Indiana, a near total abortion ban is also set to go into effect later this week. But this comes as many candidates in November's election are scrubbing their websites of any mention of their anti-abortion stance. Separately, Senator Lindsey Graham introduced a bill on Tuesday that would ban abortions nationwide after 15 weeks of pregnancy. This is the most significant proposal by Republicans in Congress to curtail the procedure since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade about 3 months ago. It was a strange move, though, given that most Republican nominees are scrubbing their websites of any mention of their primary anti-abortion stance as they tack toward the center for the general election in November. But Lindsey Graham is alienating many of his Republican colleagues by introducing this bill and making statements like this.
I look forward to the debate. I look forward to the vote. If we take back the House and the Senate, I can assure you we'll have a vote on our bill. If the Democrats are in charge, I don't know if we'll ever have a vote on our bill.
Keep it up, Lindsey, so to speak. Bruce Reinhart, the federal magistrate judge in Florida, responding to a DOJ request on Tuesday afternoon, unsealed more of the affidavit that was used to obtain the search warrant executed at Mar-a-Lago last month. Former U.S. Attorney Joyce Vance on MSNBC said this additional information appears to confirm that Trump likely played a role in instructing his attorney in certifying that there were no more classified documents remaining at Mar-a-Lago before the FBI entered the resort and retrieved more than 100 that were classified and top secret. We're still waiting on the judge to decide how to proceed with the investigation into those documents. Stay tuned. A railroad strike and the economic damage it could cause is getting closer to reality. About 60,000 union members who work for the nation's freight railroads, including engineers and conductors, are set to go on strike on Friday if an agreement isn't reached on new contracts. Without them on the job, those trains will not run, nor will many commuter and Amtrak trains that run over the same freight rail lines. Ukrainian troops recaptured even more territory in the northeastern Kharkiv province on Tuesday as Russian occupying forces continued their frenzied retreat. Ukraine's border guard services say the army has retaken the town of Vovchansk, just 2 miles from the Russian border, for the first time since the invasion began in February. Russia also abandoned Melitopol, the second largest city in Ukraine's southern Zaporizhia province, fleeing toward the Russian-annexed Crimea. I can't confirm the authenticity of this audio, said to be of the fleeing Russian troops. Oh, it's a lovely sound indeed. Meanwhile, a new U.S. intelligence review is reporting that Russia has secretly given more than $300 million to foreign political parties and candidates since 2014 in a campaign to influence policies and elections. The Biden administration ordered the review this summer and downgraded the classified findings so they could share them with the public and other countries. A senior Biden administration official said Russia is, quote, trying to advantage special political parties and undermine democracy in all of these countries, and said the U.S. believes that one of the most effective ways to counter Russian covert influence is to expose it. The official said releasing the information also puts these foreign parties and candidates on notice that if they accept Russian money secretly, we can and will expose it. And finally, if you missed the 2022 Emmy Awards show, you weren't alone. The program drew a record low of 5.9 million viewers. That's a 25% drop from last year's broadcast. And that's just a bit of what's news. For now, I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Please visit NicoleSandler.com, and while you're there, click on one of those donate buttons.